Today, on this episode of the PureDirect Special Spotlight.
We have had different, ADCs in particular, or more specifically, that target HER2, but there now is a new wave of small molecules that are also target HER2.
Today, Drs. Herzberg and Yu join the podcast to discuss HER2-positive lung cancer breakthroughs, new targeted therapies explained, in this PureDirect Special Spotlight. All opinions expressed are those of the presenters and do not necessarily reflect the views of this educational initiative's supporters.
Hello, I'm Benjamin Herzberg, and I'm a medical oncologist specializing in thoracic malignancies at Columbia University Irving Medical Center in New York.
And I'm Helena Yu. I'm a thoracic medical oncologist, associate attending in the thoracic oncology at Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center, as well as an associate professor of medicine at Weill Cornell Medical Center.
Thanks for joining us. It's been a few weeks since ESMO 2025 and a few months since the World Conference of Lung Cancer 2025, and we've had some time to digest all the new data that came out, especially around targeted therapies for HER2-altered lung cancer. We're very lucky to have Dr. Yu, who not only attended both meetings, but also presented several of the key studies we'll be talking about. Helena, there was a lot of excitement coming out of both conferences, new mechanisms, promising efficacy signals, and even a few surprises. Ready to get started?
Absolutely, Ben.
So before we talk about WCLC 2025, maybe you can start by taking us through some of the background on HER2 as a biomarker in non-small cell lung cancer, and then we can move on to the data.
I think that's a great idea. I think, we use the term HER2 positive, but that can mean a lot of different things. There are different alterations that fall under that HER2 positive umbrella. So first are HER2 activating mutations. Those occur in about 2-3% of all non-small cell lung cancers and really represent usually an insertion or a point mutation, typically an exon 20 of HER2. And again, those are rare. We do see those in never smokers that develop lung cancer. And that's in contrast to HER2 amplifications. And that is an increase in gene copy number that is greater than the standard. And those are detected either by next generation sequencing or FISH testing. And those are also rare, about 2-5%. Will have higher level amplifications. Interestingly, HER2 mutations and HER2 amplifications are quite separate, non-overlapping. There's only probably about 10% overlap. And then finally, there's HER2 protein expression or overexpression, which is assessed by using immunohistochemistry or IHC and can be labeled 1+, 2+, 3+, 3+ being the highest kind of intensity of staining. That occurs in about 20% of non-small cell lung cancers, although high-level staining, 3+ diffusely, is probably less than 5%. And I know we'll talk about it, but you know, there are the two main treatments are approved for HER2 mutant lung cancers, and of course there is a HER2 overexpressed indication for TDXD, but slightly different efficacy, and then again, just slightly different approvals for these different things.
And so let's talk maybe, the data that we saw coming out of both these conferences, I think, was mostly applicable to these mutations, this first group that you talked about. Maybe let's talk about the first data we saw from World Lung, which was the Beamion Lung 1 data. So what do you think about that?
Yeah, this was great. I mean, I think we have had different, ADCs in particular, or more specifically, that target HER2. But there now is a new wave of small molecules that are also target HER2. And so the data really came right off of the actual recent FDA approval of zongertinib. But there was a Time New England Journal article and then the presentation of Beamion Lung 1. This study consisted of 75 patients that were previously treated with concurrent either chemotherapy or chemotherapy and immunotherapy. They had to have HER2 mutations, so again, those HER2 insertions or point mutations. And then this study looked at zongertinib in that patient population. So in those 75 patients, zongertinib had a confirmed overall response rate of 71%. The median duration of response was impressively long at 14.1 months, and the median progression-free survival was 12.5 4.4 months. And these durable responses were observed across different patient subgroups. And importantly, we know that patients with HER2 mutant lung cancer do have a high incidence of brain metastases. And so when comparing these different available drugs, understanding CNS penetrance and CNS efficacy are important. And we did see reports of clear activity in measurable brain metastases on this study, which is an important area to assess.
So an important consideration, Helena, for a lot of these drugs is the intracranial activity, because we know that a lot of these patients have brain metastases during their disease course. Can you tell us a little bit about what we found out about zongertinib's activity in this setting?
Yeah, absolutely. I do agree with you that understanding CNS efficacy is going to be a main way that we actually compare these drugs because of the high incidence of CNS involvement for this patient population. So in the BEAMEON Lung01 study, they did demonstrate activity against measurable brain metastases, really showing that there was good penetration of this agent into the central nervous system.
And I always think that's the best level of evidence that we can get for intracranial activity, right? To show that actually intracranial tumors are shrinking really gives us a lot of confidence in the activity of the drug.
I think you're absolutely right. And I think that studies are now being more thoughtful about really focusing or enrolling a small cohort of patients with measurable CNS disease so that we can really see, you know, more granularly how these drugs affect, you know, disease in that system.
And I'm always happy when we see studies enrolling that. I agree. Same thing. And now tell us maybe about the toxicity profile of zongertinib, because it's similar to some HER2 drugs we've seen in the past, but also has some differences.
Yeah, I think this, you know, I would say to sum it up, I think it does have a very favorable safety profile. You know, the drugs that were predecessors were antibody drug conjugates. So, of course, there were chemotherapy-related toxicities. And with this, really, all of the toxicities were largely low-grade. There weren't significant frequencies of diarrhea or rash, which we can see with HER2 inhibition. And really importantly, there were no cases of interstitial lung disease that were reported. For ADCs, there is, you know, a class effect of having pneumonitis or interstitial lung disease. And to see that not be an issue with this agent really, you know, feels like a step forward for patients.
Please join us for the next part of our discussion on the World Conference of Lung Cancer and ESMO 2025.
And that's today's Specialist Spotlight. Thank you for joining us for this episode of PeerDirect Medical News Podcast. For more stories like these, visit us at PeerDirect.com. Thoughts, comments, or suggestions? Please leave us a review in your preferred listening platform or email us at editorial@PeerDirect.com. Listen and subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also download our Amazon Alexa Flash Briefing Medical News Roundup and just ask, "What's my flash briefing?" Thanks today to our guest, Drs. Herzberg and Yu. Join me next time for an episode where we'll cover the latest stories in the world of medicine.